Well, it's time for the Precious Metals Market Report on the Celeri Report, and I'm pleased to be able to welcome Franklin Sanders back. Today is Thursday, April 10th. It's spring here in Tennessee, so we're enjoying the end of a very long and cold winter. Franklin, welcome to the Celeri Report.
Oh, I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Well, you've prepared a great deal of very good and useful charts. We're going to have them up on the blog post, and of course they'll be running in the audio. So bring us up to date on the precious metals market, where we've come for the last quarter, and walk us through these great charts. We can't thank you enough for doing them.
Well, let me go back. Let's go back first to our presupposition of a primary uptrend in gold and silver. Because, I mean, that's the way I invest. I look for the primary uptrend. That is, the trend that will last 15 to 20 years and go either up or down. And my premise is that the primary uptrend in gold began in 2001 and in silver in 2001, and it'll run 15 to 20 years. So a gold uptrend means that there must be a dollar downtrend, because it's the loss of value in the dollar that really drives a gold bull market and silver bull market. So this first chart is a chart of the United States Treasury bond, the 30-year bond, against gold. And you see that the price, the value of the bond divided by gold has decreased since 2000. One, and what that, because that's a fraction, the bond price is divided by the gold price. So what you're seeing as the price goes down is that the price of gold is actually rising. And you can see that since this book correction began in silver and gold back in 2011, that that gold has lost value against the bond. But you notice that it got up to the downtrend line and now can't break through that downtrend line. And looks like it's about to resume the downtrend. And as I said, this is really a chart. The bond is a promise to pay dollars in the future. And what you see is that dollars in the future and dollars in the present, too, are becoming less and less valuable against gold over time. This next chart is a chart of the bank index, which includes the stocks of various large banks, against gold, divided by gold. So again, it's a fraction. And when the numerator, which is the bank index, rises, then the price goes up. When the gold price rises, the price goes down. So you can see that there was a trend established in 2001, a downtrend, primary downtrend established in 2001, and that's that heavy blue line on the chart. And whenever you, this is really a measure of confidence. Does the public trust the banking system more, or do they trust gold more? And you can see that confidence shifting from the banking system to gold all the way into 2009 with an established downtrend. And then there was this waterfall in 2008 and 2009, which reflects the banking panic. And even though gold went down, the banks went down worse, because the panic of 2008 was precipitated, of course, by the insolvency of the big banks and illiquidity of the big banks. So you see that there was a kind of a double bottom in 2009 and late 2011, and the banking sector has recovered confidence against gold in that time. And that this, of course, is also a function of the rally in the general stock market, because the banking system is at the heart of the stock market. So if people are confident about the stock market, they're going to be confident about the bank. But you'll notice also that the graph is starting to roll over now. That's where that red arrow is. The graph is starting to roll over, and probably this has reached its high point. So let's see what gold is doing exactly. This is a monthly chart of gold. This next chart is a monthly chart of gold and gives you an idea of, it enables us to stand back and sort of eliminate all the noise of the daily ups and downs, which often don't amount to very much. And you can see that that blue dashed line is the major uptrend line. And you can see that in 2006 and 2007, gold started to pull away from that lower line and rise faster and faster until it peaked in 2011. And then we got that peak in 2011. It's been going down still. And it just about hit the uptrend, the major monthly uptrend line there. And now it appears to have bounced off and started to rally and change directions. But we're not going to be out of the woods until gold closes above that dashed red line, which is the downtrend line from the top in August of 2011.
So it's about 1550.
Yeah, about that. About 1550. In fact, just about the same place that it fell off in April of last year. So, but it must get over from a technical standpoint. It has to get above that line before it confirms that it has turned around and is ready to rally again. And let me just reveal one of my presuppositions here. It's very common in primary trends, that is, let's just say a 20-year bull market. Somewhere in the course of that bull market, about the middle, there'll be a big, huge correction that makes everybody think, uh-oh, the game is over, the trend is over. That happened with stocks in 1987, and it took a little over 2 years for them to recover after that correction. This is exactly what you've seen in gold and silver. So if you look at that whole uptrend from 2001 until 2011, and you say that was about an eightfold increase, the increase from the bottom of this recovery to the next top, the ultimate top in the market, will be much greater than that. So you need to bear that in mind, that once gold and silver begin to rally again, they will outperform their performance in the first half or so of this bull market. Notice that MACD indicator at the bottom of the chart, you see that that's rolling up and starting that black line is starting to roll up. When that black line crosses that red line, that will be a buying signal, and that will confirm again that gold has turned its monthly trend up.
Right now, I just have to tell you, if anything, I've just posted two articles up on the blog, one from Rambus Chartology about the concern that there's another leg down, mm-hmm. and then the other one from Chris Martinson sort of making the case on why we've probably hit the bottom and it's time to buy. Mm-hmm. And, because I wanted everybody to get the sort of both points of view, but I'm very concerned about the possibility of another leg down this summer. So I
appreciate what you're saying, and going back to this gold monthly chart, it's certainly possible that you'll get another fall that could go to 1,100. That becomes less and less likely as time goes on, and it looks like that double bottom that you had in June and December will hold. Of course, and I'll talk about this when we get into the shorter term charts, you always have to have confirmation. And there's right. there's some, you know, there's at every, as you keep rising, there are sequential levels of confirmation. And right now, that's what I'm saying about this gold monthly chart here. Until this is not an ironclad deal, that we can't say with ironclad certainty that gold has finished its correction until it gets above that line, which is about 1550.
Right.
And not coincidentally, if you look at any other chart, you're going to come to the same conclusion, that we can't say there is no more possibility of a drop to 1100 or 1050 until it crosses above that line.
Right. So I want folks to be prepared to, you know, if we're not, if we haven't bottomed yet, I want them to be prepared to live through a bottom. And if they're, you know, I have subscribers looking to buy, you know, if they're looking to buy, then they need to realize this could be, you know, we could have found a bottom, or we could have, we, you know, it's not over yet. So they just need to be prepared for it to go either way.
Right. And one of the problems with that is that, you know, if you look back at December when you had an 1180 low, or back in the last couple of weeks when you had a 1280, roughly a 1280 low, if you keep, as you keep waiting for confirmation, if you wait too long, you're going to pay $200, $300, $400, $500 more an ounce for gold. So you're kind of caught in the jaws of this dilemma. Which is it? You know, which am I?
Well, it's real funny because I'm looking to buy some more coins, and I'm going to wait. I'm going to wait. But and I realize I could be wrong. I'm certainly not going to wait for 1530. I'm just going to wait until I really believe a bottom, or I'm going to wait through the summer and see if we get another leg down. So now, but I already have a core position, so.
Right. And I, you know, one of the bad things about technical analysis is that much of the time it's all in flux.
And all you can right, it looks like, you know, it looks like this today, and then tomorrow it can look very different.
Right, and that's the reason I pay attention to analysts who are more skilled than I am at viewing longer term cycles and setting targets. And there's conflict among those people who are, you know, highly skilled professionals that most people would not come across. And some of them say, no, it's finished. And others say it isn't. I think it is, personally. I mean, I think the arguments are on the side that it's finished. But I certainly recognize the other side of that. Here's the monthly chart of silver, if you're ready to go on. And you can see that silver has come down and hit its monthly uptrend line. That is the long-term primary uptrend line. You can see where that line is. You can see, if you look at the RSI, which is that indicator above, that it got lower in June than it has been at any time in this bull market, all the way back to 2001. And so that would tend to indicate a washout, too. If you look down at the bottom at the MACD indicator, you'll see that that black line is trying to roll up and go over that red line.
Right, but it hasn't yet.
You know, that'll be the final call. And if you look, silver about 2350 or so, once you get above 2350, and certainly once you get above $25, there's going to be no arguing that the correction is over, the correction has ended. But silver has behaved a little oddly. Sometimes it's led in this, as we're trying to recover. You know, there was a big rally last from December of the end of December of 2013 until mid March, and silver kind of lagged in that. And we want to see silver. We want to see silver take some lead. We want to see silver do better. By that, the indicator that I watch for that is the gold-silver ratio. That is how many ounces of silver it takes to buy 1 ounce of gold. And the lower that goes, the fewer ounces it takes, and that means that silver is rising faster than gold. So we haven't seen that yet. That's gone back and forth in a really frustrating pattern. The next chart we've got is a gold weekly chart. And this one is all fancied up, as you can see. But I want you to notice first that strong uptrend line, the blue line, and you see that gold came down at the December low almost to that uptrend line. It almost touched that uptrend line, which gives more credibility to the idea that we've seen the lows. We saw a double bottom in June and December, and that's what those two arrows are under that blue line on the right side of the chart. You see also that back in 2008, when gold had made that huge correction, it came almost to that line, almost to that uptrend trend line, but didn't quite go touch it or go through it. Also, if you look up at the RSI, you see that those lows, where you see the lows in the RSI, those are places that have marked before lows in the gold market. And we got two lower lows, lower than any other time in the bull market, at the two lows that we saw in June. Well, not in December, but in June and then later in September or so. Also, if you look down at the MACD below, you'll see that the black line has crossed over the slower red line, and that also is an indicator that the market has turned up. Down below, those are the stochastics, and those are kind of neutral. They don't really say much. Gold is correcting right now, and that's sort of what they say, but they'll give us a lot more information than that. If you look at the silver weekly chart, which is the next chart that we've got, you'll see the similarities with gold's chart. You've got this long-term blue uptrend line where silver revisited back in 2008. Then you had that massive rally, and it has not come down yet to touch that line. You know, sometimes you can manipulate these lines so they change around, and I could raise that line and so that the 2008 low cut through it, and that would make silver have touched the line here in the last year. But I'm satisfied with the way it is. I mean, I think it's come down far enough. You've got those two bottoms again, as those two red arrows under the blue line indicate. You've had these massive lows in the RSI. That's the indicator above. You had these lower lows and this enormously overbought or oversold situation in silver back in 2013. So it really looks like silver is not going to make another trip lower. If it did, then you're looking at, you know, $15. If it did. There's a lot of support down. If you look, there was a peak at 1520, and so there's a lot of support straight across there, and then the uptrend line comes in about $15. So that's possible, but again, I'm kind of on the unlikely side of that. This next chart is a chart of the Dow Jones Industrial Average for the last 19 years, and the reason I show this chart is because this is like the great cloud that hangs over markets and the economy. I think this chart says more than any other chart I could possibly show you. It shows that for 16 years, the Dow has been, and if you look at any other stock index, it has a chart that looks like this, the S&P and so forth. So I'm not just picking one index and finding something odd in it. This is common to every stock index. You see this enormous broadening top or megaphone formation, which you might call a jaws of death because it's getting ready to close. And what that's the longer something like that takes to form and to trace out, the stronger it is. And you'll notice that the Dow has traded up to that top boundary line of the megaphone now. It might go over that just a little, but most likely you're going to see a top sometime probably in May, but perhaps as late as November. And when that happens, you're going to get an enormous plunge, and that plunge will be the correction of a 300-year upcycle because stocks started going up with the Mississippi bubble about 1720. So this is the chart that really casts a pall over the stock market and over the economy in general, because if you get a plunge like that, and I think you will, then that means that the economy is going to be doing terribly as well. So
I'll tell you, you know, because yeah. I've looked at this and I don't I think there are a couple different ways it can go. A big one is if you go back and you look at the, you know, the unnerving thing about putting money in the equity market, the North American equity markets right now, is their PE is so high relative to historical. And beneath that PE, you've got a lot of reengineering going on in the economy that makes the earnings very divergent as to who's going to have earnings going forward and who's not. So there's a lot of sort of change going on inside the index. But if you look at the PE, it's very high relative to historic, except for one thing, and that is any period where you have enormous amounts of new innovation. You know, you see the PE skyrocket, and, I call it a crash up. Even bigger than that is if you look at the global, you know, the thing that's happening, which is unusual right now, is you have people all around the world coming into the markets through smartphones. So we now have more people on smartphones than we have people who have toilets. So we're up to about 2 billion people on smartphones. Since the high of gold in 2011, we've gotten almost 1 billion people access to the internet. And the critical question, so when I look at the gold market, I think one of the things that really brought the price down was all the restrictions placed on the Indian gold market. And we see this week, those restrictions starting to come off. And, so I think a lot of what's driven the price is the need for the central banks to restore, replenish, rebalance their gold stores. You know, so there's been a real competition between, sort of the central banks and the retail customers, and restrictions have driven a lot. So, you know, for the first time in history, we have enormous amounts of Chinese and Indian retail customers who buy gold and silver, you know, and they save with bank deposits, they save with real estate, they save with gold. They don't save traditionally with equities. You know, the United States and the pension funds here buy equities, but globally, you know, nobody else buys equities. And so to me, the big swing here is, now that you've got 2 billion people and plans to get 7 billion people on smartphones, what are they going to invest in? Is it going to be bank deposits? Is it going to be real estate? Is it going to be gold and silver? Is it going to be equities? Is it going to be a balance of those things? And to me, that's an enormous swing that's brand new. And I have no idea which way it's going to go, but I think it can... I don't know, 7 billion people, what they do can always surprise me. I live in a town of 200 people, and what they do always surprises me.
Yeah. Of course, one of the things, if you're going to talk about smartphones, one of the things that has not happened yet but is beginning to happen is the transfer. It's what was always easy to envision with the happening with the internet since 1990. And James Turk and I talked about this when he was working on the patents for gold money. And that is, once you are able to electronically transfer gold balances easily, then it wouldn't take 2 years to completely undercut for some kind of gold backed electronic money or gold and silver backed to undercut all national fiat currencies, because the currency is superior, the gold currency is superior. The problem is with it today is that it's not liquid. That is, you can't use it every day in transactions that you make. Well, in Africa, payment systems through smartphones or through cell phones are much more used than they are here.
Right.
And they are working on plans that will allow them to transfer gold balances. And what the point I'm trying to make is, once that goes viral, governments will not be able to stop it. I'm not saying they won't try to stop it. They've been trying to stop it. I mean, they have tried to hem in gold money, just as one example, since the very beginning, and tried to call them a payment service and so forth and so on. to keep them from offering that service and to hamstring that service at every level, at every turn. But once that starts and goes viral, once the repudiation of those national fiat currencies begins and people turn to an electronically transferable gold and silver money, it'll go so fast that the central banks won't be able to do anything.
Well, let me, it's in one sense I agree, but in one sense I disagree, because to me the reserve currency is driven by force, not by economic value.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a much more, you have a much more optimistic view of the world.
It's not that I don't think, I just conceded that they've done everything possible to block it. They're certainly as clever as I am, or more clever. They can see forward to these things and how they would unfold. But I just think that you can't get in front of a stampede.
Economics matter. I think, Franklin, if you look at the consolidation we've had since 2011, I'm constantly asked why I feel so confident in the long-term primary trend. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that anything can happen and that I could be wrong about the long-term primary trend, but I don't think I am. And, there's no doubt to me we're looking at a global economy that's being rebalanced. Everybody's being brought into the global economy through the smartphone technology. And what is going to happen, if you said to me, what do we need to get gold adopted, whether as part of a digital currency or as a, as the core trading system among the central banks, we clearly needed a consolidation that allowed a lot more people to come into the market and allow the Asian retail customers to come in and the central banks to rebalance. So if you look at everything that's happened during the consolidation, it's doing a lot to create the kind of base you need for the thing you're talking about to happen. In other words, gold had run up so far so fast, and the number of people who held gold was still relatively small. And, I dare say during this consolidation, that base has been widened dramatically. Wouldn't you expect that?
Well, yeah. I don't look at it quite the same way that you do. I think there, the system, the financial system, the term you use is rebalancing. I'm not so sure that it can be fixed. From my standpoint, the system itself is the problem, and tweaking around the edges, even major tweaking, won't help. And what I've seen in the last 5 years is that the system has made itself more consistent with what it was. In other words, it's become more purely what it always was, but it's become more like itself. If I were using moral terms, I would say it's become even more evil than it was before.
Right. And also the evilness has become more obvious. One of the, just as the internet provides access, of the NSA to, sort of become much more invasive, it also connects everybody and lets them see the information to understand what in the world's going on.
Yeah, I think the internet is an example of how things can get away from government controllers, because even though the internet has a lot of bad stuff, any idiot can get on there and say anything he wants without proof. And also, without question, government authorities are on there creating false rumors and issuing false reports, it's all kinds of disinformation. But at the same time, how do you put the cork back in that bottle today? I mean, the Chinese are not even successful at doing it. So, I think the possibility always exists that the shepherds are run over by a stampede. And I don't know that that's going to happen, but I think that it's certainly there's a possibility that it could happen. And I see these little straws in the wind, like what's happening in Africa with electronic payments. I know that some fairly big people are coming out with a gold and silver electronic payment system fairly soon.
Right.
So can that survive? Can no doubt the powers that be will be will be bending every nerve to suppress that. But can it get out from under the box before they do that? I don't know.
Well, if you know, it's very interesting. When Bitcoin was really rising, there was a headline coming out that the Jersey Isle Authority had been approached about combining Bitcoin with gold. And I said, well, here it comes. Because, as you know, I think Bitcoin is coming top down. It's not coming bottom up.
Yeah.
So, and I, you know, I'll make it very clear. I think what the G7 wants is they want a digital currency. And if you took a digital currency that essentially destroys anonymity, which is, I think, where Bitcoin is going and virtual currency is going, and you combine it with gold, then from the leadership's point of view, you got the best of both worlds. You got sound money. You know me, Franklin. Once you steal everything, then you want to keep it. And so sound money works in your favor. The question is, if you do that, how in the world are you going to, you know, keep Social Security and all these different transfer payments going? That's the question.
Well, that brings us to a bigger consideration of the unworkability of the system that they've set up. But and probably it's a better idea that I go to the next chart than we try to unravel that, because we'll be here all day if we do. This next chart is a chart of the Dow Jones Industrials divided by gold. And as you can see, whenever this is, again, a fraction with the Dow Jones Industrial as the numerator, the top part of the fraction, and the gold is the denominator. So whenever gold is rising faster than the Dow Jones Industrial, this graph drops. And you can see that it turned in August of 1999 when it reached about 45 ounces, not quite 45 ounces. And you see that heavy blue downtrend line that has ruled ever since, except, see where I've got these red arrows over on the right-hand side? You see that last year it broke up through that downtrend line, and then it appears to have peaked at the end of the year, at the end of 2013, and it's gone down ever since. But again, until it gets back below that blue line, we can't say for sure, yes, it's turned again. One of the things that I'd like to point out is that if you went back in this chart and you drew lines, if you couldn't see the whole right side of the graph and you drew downtrend lines, what would happen is those downtrend lines kick out, they keep kicking out to the right, and that's normal in the process of a market. But the what we're waiting to see, this is a primary trend of stocks losing value against gold or gold gaining value against stocks. And the long-term target for this, and I base this on historical performance back to 1896, the long-term target here is 1 to 2 ounces of gold to buy the entire Dow. Right now it's about 12 and a half. So it's got if that long-term target works, it's got quite a ways to go. It has to lose about 5/6 of its present value. This next chart is the Dow in silver, which looks a lot the same, but you see it also appears to be rolling over. I've got an arrow pointing to the stochastics down there. This started in 2001. The downtrend started in 2001. And just like the gold, last year in 2013, it broke up through the downtrend line. And so we're still waiting to see it go below that downtrend line, which right now is about 500 ounces, before we can say, yes, okay, the trend is still intact. So that's one that I watch very anxiously. And one of the reasons I watch it is because the Dow in gold has been such a reliable, and the Dow in silver has been such a reliable indicator for me over the years. And so I'm always I'm nervous when it's rising the way it has been in the last year and a half, but then that's part of this whole correction. Coming down a little closer, I want to look at gold's four-month chart, and this is a chart I use every day, so I apologize, it's a little busy. But what this four-month chart shows is there's a little head over there where I've got the word head written. And if you could see it, that heavy dashed line below the blue line, below the solid blue line, is the neckline of an upside down head and shoulders. And that upside down head and shoulders got up to the 1392 level. It broke out, the upside down head and shoulders formation broke out where that red arrow is back in February, and it rose up to 1392, and then pretty predictably, it fell back. And when it fell back right below that neckline. Now, this is typical behavior for a market, that it makes an upside down head and shoulders, it breaks out through the neckline, rallies, and then comes back for one final kiss goodbye before it takes off. That's where that 1277 line is. It appears to have done that. It's also gotten back up over its 200-day moving average. Where will the big question come? Or the answer to the question come? The answer to the question really won't get here until the gold market gets up above about 1435. And until it gets up above that, you know, that'll be our first big confirmation. Yes, indeed, the market is rallying. And then after that, it has to get back up over that 1550 area that we pointed to back in when we were looking at the monthly chart, because gold has to close over that to give us a final confirmation that this is all over. This chart that you see now, this four-month chart, you know, it could be fooling us. It might go, it might have come down here. It might rise again almost to that 1390 and then come back again and go lower still, and that might be the fulfillment of your expectation of another low. That's a possibility. Right. I don't think that's going to happen. I think if it does come back, it won't come back farther than that neckline. Let's go to a 5-day chart on gold. And you can see that on the 5-day chart, there was a low on Monday, and then there was a higher low on Wednesday, and then on, this is today, as it's trading, you'll see that you have a pattern of higher lows and higher highs, which is, of course, the definition of an uptrend.
Right, it's always a good sign.
Yeah, this is a very, it's always a good sign. Always a good sign.
Right, and we have the dollar dropping. You know, the dollar's had a very bad week.
Yeah, I don't have a chart of the dollar with me, but frankly, the dollar looks like, it really looks like it's going to tank. It had the opportunity to rally the first half of this year. It was very slow and lazy. Never showed very much enthusiasm except for one day, and got up to the first, not even the big resistance level, but the first resistance level at 80.50, and now it's fallen back from that, fallen back below 80, and it just looks terrible. If I owned dollars, I'd be reaching for my wastebasket to puke in my wastebasket. Because
not me. Well, let's see. You know, to me, it's either going to get major support between 78 or 79, or it's not. But to me, we've been here many times before.
Yeah, and the thing that you can't, the problem with currency markets especially, is that they are so deeply manipulated. They are so thoroughly manipulated. I have no doubt in my mind when you see a big move in the currency market, the reason is because all of the heads of the central banks or their representatives sitting around once a month in front of a rubber chicken dinner in Basel at the Bank for International Settlements made a deal. Well, you're going to let the euro go up this month. I'm going to let the dollar go down. The yen, we're going to kind of go sideways. They do that. I mean, they're on record. You know,
it's a managed. Well, I think one of the big issues for all markets is interest rates. And we've seen interest rates, you know, we've been coming down for 30 years until last year, and it started to sneak up. And then when Yellen went in, she implied that they were going to let interest rates rise a bit, and everyone got scared. And to me, if you look, you know, the stock market story is very easy quantitative, in addition to quantitative easing, which is if you've been worried about safety since 2008, you haven't gotten any yield. And you're not going to get any yield in precious metals. You're certainly not going to get any yields if you're staying 5 years short in bonds or in the, you know, the short to intermediate spectrum. And so people have been going to the stock market for yield. Right. Because at some point people have to pay their, you know, if you're retired, you need to pay your rent. So there's there's a real discomfort about how am I going to get yield. And I think that's part of what's shifted people out of precious metals and into equities.
Well, that's part of controlling public behavior. They certainly, the Fed knows that when they keep interest rates low, and the reason they're doing that is in the interest of the government being able to sell its bonds and not go deeper and deeper into debt, but also primarily in the interest of making the big banks whole, which they've spent 5 years doing, taking the junk off of their balance sheets and putting it on the Fed's balance sheet.
Okay, so this is where you and I just are going to flat out disagree. If you look at the stocks I own, the ones that, you know, you can get, and this is particularly in emerging markets because emerging markets are down, you can get 5 to 10% of dividends from a great enterprise with great management that does something pretty boring but pretty, you know, necessary. And, you know, and that's a great investment.
Well, I'm not saying that's not, but what I'm saying is that if you drive interest rates down to zero, then people don't have any choice but to go into stocks. That controls their behavior.
And or real estate.
Well, yeah, real estate, but real estate's a bigger problem now. You know, that's, real estate still suffers from the bad smell of the crash in 2006.
Right, but you are watching a lot of both institutional and retail money shift into real estate just so they can lock up a 5% yield.
Right, not, I don't doubt that, but my main point is you are seeing the top in a bond bull market that started 30 years ago. You're right about that.
Right.
Just like the stock market. The bond market is huge. It's huger, in fact, and it doesn't turn fast. It doesn't turn fast. So if you're trying to short bonds now, you're going to get killed.
Well, it's funny. Think of it this way: we've had the whole investment community, whether institutional or retail, saying, "I don't have to worry about fundamentals because I'll just get a government guarantee. I'll just get bonds. I don't need to worry about it." And it's almost as though the whole planet is realizing, oh, you know, so that was great and that was fun, but we're destroying the environment, we're killing each other. You know, how are we going to shift into a model where, you know, everything is risk on and we're going to have to manage it in a way that, you know, builds wealth instead of destroys wealth? You know, that's a 500-year change.
I think there's another trend that's topping here is the concentration and centralization of power in the state. And it's very hard for us to see because we're living at the peak as it's rolling over. But since about 1600, states have been created. You know, the states before 1650 didn't exist. Monarchies existed, and when you took an oath of allegiance, you took an oath of allegiance not to a state but to an individual, a king. Well, today, all of that shifted. The state has become a corporate entity, a juridical person that has no physical existence. And power has flowed from the periphery to the center, to the state in the center for 350 years. And now it's topped. And what do you see? You see one empire worldwide that has hegemony over the whole world. Where can you go from there? You can't go to half an empire. And so I think that trend, for a lot of reasons, I'm convinced that trend is turning over. And
so let me,
the turn in the bond market is part.
Yeah, the turn in the bond market is definitely a turn from government to, well, the problem is you can, there's such a thing as a private police state these days, but that's for another topic.
Right, exactly. But But in so that the interest rates will go up, and when they go up, when the market takes control away from the Fed and they go up, then the Fed's going to have a lot of trouble. Then there are going to be a lot of big changes. But that hasn't happened yet. And so all you can do is look at the chart and say, well, when is that going to happen? Let me
Go
ahead.
Okay, we've got 4 more minutes, and I want to ask you a question.
Okay. All right. Well,
go ahead and finish the charts.
Okay. Well, if you look at the 4 month silver chart, you see pretty much the same sort of thing. You see that silver's found its feet down here at 1960. And as long as it stays above 1960, then it ought to rally. But it's got to get over $20.15. And after that, it's got to get over that past peak back in February at 22.18. But if you look at a longer-term silver chart, then what you're going to see is that there's $25, and actually a little higher than that, about $26.25, is the big line. And it has to get over that to give us complete and total confirmation. But every indication is that it's pointed that way. If you look at the very short-term silver chart, you see that we got a bottom on Wednesday the 9th, and then it's been zipping up ever since then. So
I confess, just because I'm worried we might have to, you know, live through another leg down before we establish the bottom,
right,
that I feel a lot more comfortable with gold right now than silver. You know, just
it's always less volatile. Upside or down.
Well, but also, you know, I take a look at the Asian retail customer and their love with gold. And what I say is there's tremendous market fundamentals on the side of gold over the long run. And, you know, there's also industrial policy mucking around with silver. Well, let me quick jump, because I do have one question that you and I have gone back and forth on. We have a wonderful subscriber in a urban environment who has been informed by his bank he can't hold legal tender in his safe deposit box. Now, I've spent a fair amount of time at the FDIC website trying to figure out if the, you know, this is coming from the bank or the regulators. It doesn't seem to be an overt policy that I can tell, but so he's having to get his 90% silver, and obviously given that he rents in an urban environment, the last thing he wants to do is keep it at home, although I would argue, you know, one of the things you can do is use two small safes, one hidden, one not. And there are ways of doing it, but it requires an investment. So I did want you to go over what the potential depository choices are that are available and how to explore them further.
Okay, well, let me give you two depository choices. The first one is Diamond State Depository in Newcastle, Delaware. Phone number is 302-322-6150. And Diamond State is, you know, new. They're reputable. They give good service. The problem with all of these depositories, I want to make clear, is that you can't tell what they charge. It's very difficult to compare their charges because in the end, I don't think any of them offer any bargains over the other. One of them charges more for this, but less for that, and then the other is the other way around. But whatever you do, you want segregated storage. And both Diamond State Depository and the other one I'm going to mention, C&T Depository, both offer segregated storage. You want to pay for segregated storage. What that means is that you don't have a claim to an undifferentiated claim to some pile of gold and silver. You have your stuff is put aside in a place with your name on it. Think about it as being put aside in a bag with your name on it. And so that's the only kind of storage that I want. The other folks are C&T Depository in Bridgewater, Connecticut. And their phone number, I'm sorry, Bridgewater, Massachusetts. I can't tell any difference in New England states. I'm just,
they're all just Yankees to you, right?
Yankees up there. their phone number is 508-807-4800. And this is about a $20 million facility. It's brand new. I have been up there and toured it. My wife Susan and I and my son Justin and his wife Ellen went up there and toured this place, and I pity the person who tries to break in there. That's all I can say. This is absolutely state-of-the-art, and they offer every kind of service, and they may sound on the front end like they're a little bit more expensive than somebody else, but our experience is that they're not really, and they offer really good service. So either one of those places. Now, let me go back to your customer. Your customer needs to get a new bank.
He definitely needs to get a new bank. There is no doubt about that.
These people are full of hogwash. There's no regulation that says that. And, they're just paranoid. And besides,
let me tell you what this is about. This is real simple. I was driving. I was over at the radio station at University of Memphis yesterday looking at a studio we're going to use to do this Salary Report. And I was driving back, and there was a teenager out in the street with a huge sign saying, "We buy gold," pointing into the pawn shop. So the giant sucking sound of getting people to sell their physical and bring that physical in for the central banks is, it continues. So I just think it's all part of the giant sucking sound of getting you to feel nervous and scared about holding physical.
Right. Well, but he needs to get a new bag. It clearly.
Yeah, he definitely needs to get a new bag.
But let me go back. As far as storage yourself, which is always the best alternative. What I would do is people want something for nothing. I'm sorry, we're all that way. I'm that way. But you're not going to get something for nothing, so you're not going to get security without spending a little money.
But I will say this, the way within my world, the way people lose money on precious metals is their coins get stolen or they forget where they put them. And so you and I did an audio seminar on how to store precious metals, and we have a special report on how to store precious metals, and I would really encourage people to go back into the archives and listen to that one we did in the Precious Metals Library, because it's if you're going to store it yourself, you got to pay attention, and if you're going to do it in an urban environment, you're going to have to spend some real money. So,
Your idea of having one decoy safe that's kind of out in the open and another safe that's concealed is a very good idea, because that way if somebody does break into your house, they think they got the one safe and they're going to open it up and you got nothing but styrofoam chips in there.
I always have a Cougar Man or two to give them.
Yeah, right. So
if somebody's got a gun on me, I don't want to give them styrofoam. Around here, they'll shoot you.
That reminds me of that famous Jack Benny routine. Benny was supposed to be really, really tough, and he's telling this story. It's supposed to be one of the greatest laughs in recorded history. Excuse me. So he's telling this story, and he's walking down the street, and a fellow sticks a gun in his ribs and says, "Your money or your life." And there's this long pause. Finally, the robber says, "I said your money or your life." And Benny says, I'm thinking. I'd be the same way if they put a gun in my ribs. But in any event, you're going to have, you can't buy $50,000 worth of gold and silver and be afraid to spend $400 or $500 or $1,000 to secure it. That's
right.
Not reasonable.
Right. But if you are, there are good depositories. Okay, well, Franklin, I can't thank you enough for joining us on the Salary Report. You'll be back in a quarter. So we'll see what unfolds this summer.
Right. Thank you for the opportunity. I'm always glad to join you.
it's always a discussion. You have a wonderful day.
You too. God bless you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.